Welcome to the show. This is an exciting episode. It's co-hosted. I'm co-hosting it with a former guest, Shepherd. People remember you. They might not remember you. It's been a couple of years. Would you like to say hi and remind people of your episode? It's a fantastic episode.
Hello. I am Shepherd. I raise sheep and goats in the Piedmont of North Carolina. I was previously on to talk about sheep and goats. Sina, you still don't have any sheep or goats from what I understand.
Sadly I don't. No, sadly I do. I do have new shingles on my garage though.
That's not going to feed you is the thing. Shingles do not produce food.
Medina, welcome to the podcast. I'm pretty sure you're my second guest from actually recording from Afghanistan. So this is exciting. Would you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit we'll talk a little bit about Asil, but the project, but maybe tell us a little bit about how you got in contact with Shep.
Salam, Sina. I'm Medina, your guest from Kabul, Afghanistan. I'm working for Asil as a PR lead, and I got introduced to Shepherd through his Twitter account. He's one of the greatest supporters of Asil's work, and he's collaborating with us in a case of promoting the artisans local here and helping them sell their products, like helping Asil too. Together with Asil, we're selling those local artisans' products, and as well as on our do-good part, he's collaborating and supporting Asil to deliver more aid to people here in Afghanistan.
How did you come to get connected with this? Like, how did you connect with this?
So it all happened on Twitter, as it does. A friend of mine, Yelena War, was co-sponsoring a fundraiser. A friend of hers had introduced her to Asil. And so Yelena was co-sponsoring a fundraiser, and she and I are mutuals on Twitter. And that was how I was introduced both to Asil and to the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. And I looked at it and I kind of said, well, people are hungry and people are cold, and that's not okay. And I started badgering my Twitter followers to donate money to this campaign. And when that campaign was over, I looked at the Asil website and there were other campaigns that needed money. So I started badgering my followers to donate to those. And then Asil brought the marketplace back up. So I started showing my followers things that they could buy on Asil and making purchases myself. And at some point in there, Nasrat Khalid, the CEO, reached out to me, and Medina reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to collaborate more closely? And I said, yes, but please don't pay me, because if you pay me, then I have to tell my followers, you know, that I'm a paid influencer, and that reduces trust with my audience. This is work I would like to do as a volunteer. So here I am, volunteering with Asil, badgering my followers to give money to Afghanistan.
Medina, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Asil and what it does and, you know, how it came to be?
Well, Asil is an impact-driven tech company which started in somehow 2017, and then officially we launched Asil in 2019, like everything was official in that time. And the first aim was to help people with the economic situation in Afghanistan. Well, the big goal was to help everyone around the world in the underdeveloped countries, to help them in any cause that they need with any issue globally. So as a first country of operation, we started with Asil. And the first goal was to help people with 10,000 help 10,000 people with income sources and provide them with like a breadwinning source. So we, the first and a very good source to achieve this goal was the art handicraft in Afghanistan. Most of people in every house, you see two or three people knowing a certain handicraft. They can produce this handicraft product. So Nasrat decided to invest in this part. And, you know, Afghans are very talented in case of handmade things. They're producing very beautiful products. And but unfortunately, most of their products, they are unable to even sell it in their own neighborhood because of the lack of the market and, you know, marketing and so many other issues. So we started to invest in this regard. And there are so many products that are selling by other countries' names, like they're Afghan, but other countries have these all opportunities and all, you know, the equipments to sell it by their own name. So we decided to produce Afghan, to help in producing more Afghan handicrafts and to sell it with the name of Afghan industries and Afghan artisans in the global market. So from there, we started the buy good section, where we onboarded thousands of artisans and sold almost more than 10,000 products to customers everywhere in the world. And yeah, and after that, after the government collapsed, there were like a bigger need of food. Afghanistan was hit with the biggest humanitarian crisis ever. So we, people were from everywhere coming to the capital, Kabul, and they needed shelter, food, and everything. So ASEAL decided that as we are impact-driven and we want to bring impact wherever it's needed. And at that time, the very basic need was food. And we, at that time, lost every, like, you know, the ways to send the products to other countries. We faced a resum towards our buy goods section. So for a few months, we decided to, like, urgently shift our operations to humanitarian aid. And we started our do good and shifted all the technology to crowdfunding system where people can send aids to people who are their relatives are stuck in Afghanistan, or there were a lot of people, everyone lost their jobs. So we were like a source for people to deliver aid to people here in Afghanistan. And of course, after months, we were able to get back our ways of delivering the products to other countries. And till this date, we're pretty good with both buy good and do good sections. We're selling products of the local artisans from so many provinces in Afghanistan. And also we are delivering aids on a daily and weekly basis to provinces in Afghanistan, to people in almost 34 provinces of Afghanistan.
So I guess my sort of initial question is, like, this network of artisans, How did you kind of grow it? Was it just through kind of the Middle Eastern way, so to speak? People just asked other people and kind of it grew on its own? Or I can't imagine that there's like a lobby for artisans in Afghanistan. I imagine it's mostly just local based and whoever knows anybody. But because you would have to go and find people who were willing to sort of sell you stuff on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. So for this, we had an initiative called our Atalan Network. Atalan is a Pashto word, means, you know, heroes, or, you know, heroes. We started onboarding Atalan in different provinces of Afghanistan. This was also an income source for those people. They helped us survey the different areas in different provinces, and there they were finding those artisans who were creating like beautiful handicrafts, but they were unknown even in their own neighborhood. So they were sending us the information and, you know, their contact list. And then our buy good team They would go and then survey them. And there is a process of 2 weeks that we work with these artisans. We explain our work to them, and we just look into their products, and we know we do the photo shoot of their products, and then make a logo, business plan, and write their story of life, because people in Afghanistan, they all have a very inspiring story for the world, which is somehow creating the why of, you know, the deal for customers, like why they should buy this product from Afghanistan. And that story is a good start for them to just know that this person is suffering. This, if I buy this product from this guy, she or he will be able to serve her children, or, you know, cure a sickness in his or her family. So that's how we expanded the team of our vendors or the artisans. It was through our Atalan network.
And I think one of the great things about the buy goods section is that, you know, people in Afghanistan, from talking to the friends I've made through Azeel, they want jobs. They want to be able to work. And so when I can convince Americans and Canadians and Germans to buy products from Afghanistan, that means that people have a job and there's a little less despair. And of course, when those artisans have money, they buy food, they send their children to school, they buy clothing, and that money then spreads out through Afghanistan and helps many more people than just that artisan, and provides many more jobs than just for that one person. It's kind of a long-term solution. You know, you have the band-aid, the immediate need of the hunger packages where people are starving right now, and we obviously need to feed them. And that's a band-aid, that's stopping the bleeding. But you also have to treat this chronic problem where people need jobs. They want work to do. They want honorable good work. And so purchasing these products helps provide that. And for people in the West, of course, these are very unique, unusual products. I've converted a lot of people here in the US to wearing a patu because it's amazing. I have two now, one that is that I can wear when I'm doing chores, and then one that's a little dressier that I can wear when I'm, you know, out of the house. They're wonderful. You know, I used one on the bed as an extra blanket when I was having trouble with my wood stove. I've worn one every day since it got cold here. And so it's really teaching people, like the US, all they know of Afghanistan, right, is war. All they've seen is these images of invading soldiers. And now they can go, they can see the story of an artisan. Nuristan Fashion, one of the brands, has a Twitter account where Mr. Hanif is sharing images from Nuristan of the culture and the handicrafts there and people making them. And so now people can see these images from Nuristan of people there. They can learn about people in Afghanistan in a way that has absolutely nothing to do with the military and absolutely nothing to do with bullets and bombs. And it provides a real chance for Americans to kind of get out of this mindset that the rest of the world is this dark and mysterious place that, you know, who knows what goes on there? Maybe we should just send in the military and let them take care of it, right? If now they think of Mr. Hanif at Nuristan Fashion when they think of Afghanistan.
Yeah, that brings up a great point. I mean, I think one of the sort of economic modes of production, industrial modes of production that capitalism has kind of put on the world or sort of mapped onto the world violently. You know, in a place like Afghanistan, it's interesting that the continued of existence of these artisanal skills is actually like a product of, like, I guess the term you could resist is, you could use, is kind of resistance to that kind of industrialization. Now, mind you, it partly has to do with the fact that there's been a lot of war, and industrialization and war oftentimes don't go together because, you know, people blow up stuff that is industry as a way of destroying any resistance. But the strange, one of the sort of consequences of that, like one of the few good things, is the continuance of these traditions. So I'm curious about the artisanal hands themselves. Like, is there still a kind of like apprentice master model between these, like the people who are making these rugs, for instance? Do they have workshops? Do they have like apprentices? Like, am I just kind of like romanticizing it, or is it like, how does it work in terms of the passing on of these skills in what you've seen, Medina?
Mm-hmm. You know, they have the products, the artisans out here, they have the most beautiful products of the world. But, you know, in today's business, if you don't have the marketing tool, if you don't know, you know, the economics, the business studies, the business, you know, tricks, you're unable to do a business, or your product is losing its value. So I see the most important thing that we are doing is that we are educating these artisans with global businesses, how it works. Like, for example, there is one of our vendors who is blind. You know, she's a girl, she's blind, and, you know, she can't see anything, but she is making very beautiful products. And then our team, we have meetings with all of these vendors. We are reviewing their shops constantly, their products, their sales, and then our BuyGood team, they're holding sessions with them and telling them, okay, this product, this photography that we did for you, like for this certain product. So I say that with our team, like, we're not just doing it just to be like a work. We are so much involved with these artisans. We're thinking them as a family. Once they enter to a seal, we're trying to, you know, parent them in case of business. Like, we're telling them, hey, for example, this vendor, as I told you, she's blind. She's Roshan Dillon. Her business name is Roshan Dillon.
I consider myself a successful person. Blindness is not a disability. I want to write my story in the future. In the name of the Lord, who words are unable to express his might, I am Malika Fahimi, student of 12th grade and visually impaired in vocational high school. I'm very grateful that we have a school for people like me. Our mental health is improving every day. I'm very happy to be connected with Asil. I have had a very tough life story. I'd like to write about it in the future. I want to initiate my own charity foundation for those with disabilities. I plan to study journalism as well, because I am interested in conducting interviews and hosting TV shows. I consider myself a successful person. Disability is not inability. You know, I've fallen thousands of times, but I've always risen back, because I knew it was all me for myself. Thanks to my family for enrolling me in school, but mainly it was my own personal efforts to get here. And I will keep trying in the future, inshallah. I was born blind. Initially, my blindness was milder, but as a result of the ongoing humiliation by my relatives and friends, my condition worsened to the point where I had stopped going outside. Because of these ongoing issues, I developed depression and my mental health deteriorated. I was hospitalized by my father, who was not in a good financial condition. Yet he never gave up supporting me. He treated me in Ali Abed Hospital in Kartisaki. My uncle Muhammad Nadir, on the other hand, enrolled me in school. My father told me not to go to school because I was blind, which hurt me because I thought I was the only one who knew I was blind. I used to cry all the time, day and night, remembering all of my humiliations. I was labeled as blind, and people addressed me as Kor at all times. My life story is very sad. I could accompany my brother to Germany while he was planning to go. And some organizations tried their best to get me to Germany because they thought I was talented and had no trouble communicating with others. But because I was blind, my brother refused to take me with him because he was embarrassed by the fact that his sister was blind. And see, I'm still here, optimistic about the future.
So we are distributing everyone in Asil, not specifically the Bygood team, like starting from Nasrat Khaled, the CEO. He just goes through her product and then he likes a certain product. We have a way to communicate with this. Of course, there is a job, which the Bygood team is, as I mentioned earlier, they're holding sessions and everything. But also as our team, we're just connecting with them, like saying, hey, this product is very good. Or I, as a PR lead, I'm telling her like, okay, your story is very interesting. And I'm going to talk to this agency about you so they can feature you and raise awareness about you and, you know, spread the word about your work and your inspiring story. So there are so many ways that we collaborate with these artisans than rather that of selling their products. Like we're trying to teach them the business techniques. We're trying to promote them in any way. We're trying to educate them with the global business techniques and how they can develop a character of being a global businesswoman or businessman. We're trying to introduce them all of these trends going on in the global business on daily basis or weekly basis. We're giving presentations, as you said, maybe you can name it apprenticeship or something. We're giving them presentations and telling them, okay, this technique has worked for all of us that we like. We were featured with NPR in just in a couple of hours. It brought tremendous amount of sales to all of the vendors. So, and then we the PR, we said together, the PR team, we say that, okay, we have to reach out to this kind of agencies to feature our work. This is going to help them sell more products or help bring in more donations. So there is a lot of things that we are helping, and there is not just certain thing that we have labeled and we are doing. We're constantly exploring and brainstorming ways to develop the business, the character, like personally in their business and everything that we are involved with these people, and we are trying to make life easier and better for them in any way possible, just not in case of selling their product. But we are using this as a source to engage with people, the vulnerable people in Afghanistan, and help them by giving hope and, you know, a very clear image of their future.
And that does include an Asil program to allow artisans to take on apprentices so that they can pass these skills on for the ones that don't have, say, a family member like Mr. Wakil at Istilefi Pottery. His son works with him. So he's got his son who, I think his son is an adult, so probably has learned pretty well the business from him and making the pottery. But for the artisans that don't, Asil also has a program that they've launched where they are providing help so that artisans can take on an apprentice who then can learn these traditional skills so that they won't be lost.
Yeah, I'm curious about like how these artisans, like if there is a kind of like when they sell, now that they're selling through you guys to a sort of global market, is there a kind of I'm curious, I mean, it's kind of a random question, but like the connecting, the sort of globalization of these products, of these like localized, heavily localized Afghan products, like from this very specific country, like to sell those across the world, I'm wondering, like, are there going to be influences on those artisans from now on? Like, are you guys now, will we see a kind of like post-Asil you know, flourishing of these artisans, because now that there's like a market for it, there's like dollars, right? Because whatever you want to say, capitalism has this power to kind of just unlock people, if only in like a one, you know, like what you said, this one NPR segment suddenly brings thousands of people, right? Like that's the weird power of media can do that. Incidentally, if you're listening to this episode, you go spend your money with Aseel. I'll have a link to their website and to their YouTube and socials. So everybody look at their stuff. It's beautiful. I'm my page is on it right now. But in the meantime, like I'm curious, like what's the sort of flow back and forth between like the global people who are now buying this stuff and the very local Afghans who are making it?
I would hope that that artisans are thrilled to know that there is a global market for traditional Afghan products. I know that Mohsin, who is kind of the head of Bygood in Afghanistan and is the one who is overseeing shipments out of Kabul, that he is hugely proud every time he sees another order come in for handmade products. And I would hope that the artisans are similarly proud, and that it inspires them to keep going and to believe that, yes, traditional Afghan products and handcrafts do have value on a global scale. I think Afghans have maybe felt forgotten for too long, except when, say, the U.S. wanted to send drones in. They felt remembered only in bad ways. And I would hope that seeing that there is a global market for their products, that people love the things they make and find them beautiful, helps them feel that people are remembering them now in good ways.
Medina, maybe for our send-off, our closing question, you can kind of tell us like what, from your perspective, the world should know about how best to help Afghan people. I mean, not just in terms of Aseel, obviously you should give all your money to Aseel and buy their products, but in terms of other work, like is it just a matter of money or raising awareness, or like what do you think is the most urgent thing to do to help the people of Afghanistan?
Well, I think people of Afghanistan are not suffering only from one thing, as you mentioned, is that's money or food or anything. We are like morally people of Afghanistan. The very easiest thing they can do is to support them morally and to support who are there here in Afghanistan and who are, you know, in different countries living as refugees, because it's not easy to leave behind all the life that you have lived, all your country, loved ones, your culture. So the first thing I would request everyone is to, by any way, support them morally, or, you know, by money, by sending aid, because it might be something that by fate the people of Afghanistan are feeling or facing today. But it can be, as a human, we all know that by fate, someday some other country would experience the same. And we Afghan, we are always supportive of people who are in need. We have been this way. So today, if we are suffering, I would like to request everyone in the world to just take their time, like a little bit time off their day or their week, and make sure they support someone by any way that they have, by any opportunity that they have in hand, to make them smile or make the life a little bit easier for them, just by morally, by saying a word, by raising awareness, by donating money, by supporting someone, by sharing a story, or by any way that would make the people of Afghanistan feel good, or just sharing some good stories of Afghanistan. We are more than just a war-affected country.
That sounds to me like a fantastic place to end this conversation. Thank you very much, Medina. Thank you, Shep, for organizing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And what of all the items that you've bought for them, what do you think people should, what's been your favorite?
You know, I use my Patu every single day. It's very practical and very warm. but I did just get a candlestick in lapis from Nematola and Brotherin that is absolutely gorgeous. I also have a lapis ring from the vintage treasure shop that's amazing. Lapis from Afghanistan is absolutely incredible. Those are the oldest lapis mines in the world. You will not be sorry if you like the color blue. It's just chef's kiss. There's honestly, there's so many things. My patu is the thing I use absolutely every single day without fail, though. I wrap myself up in it every single morning and go drink tea on my front steps. So
it's just so crazy, the thought that like this person who made that patu was like in Afghanistan, if they knew that it would end up in like the mountains of the east coast of the US. Like,
yes.
it's a nice image. Like, think of all the harm that like people from our part of the world, I mean, this is depressing, but it's true, have done to Afghanistan and Afghans. And like, that person is like giving you a warm hug every day.
Yes. And you know, it's very connecting, right? Because this is the same thing that an Afghan shepherd would probably do, is sit and wrap up in a patu and drink some tea and look at his sheep. And here I am wrapping up in mine and drinking my tea and looking at my sheep in the morning and thinking about what I've got to do this day. So it's from 7,000 miles away. It's a little bit of connection between two shepherds who don't even know, you know, that the other one exists.
Fantastic. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us, Sina. It's been a pleasure, as always.
As always, as always. And I'm still waiting for those interviews with the sheep.
Yes. I'm trying to convince them, but, you know, they're not big on media appearances.
Start a TikTok.
I have one. I just never post there.
Okay. Take care, Medina. I'm going to press stop right now.